Escape Pod 24. October 20th, 2005. Today's story, The Death Trap of Dr. Nefario, by Benjamin Rosenbaum.
Hello, welcome to Escape Pod. I'm Steve Ely, and this is Geek Dad Intro Number 3. So, my son, Alex, is 7 months old today. Also today, he got his first tooth. He is, of course, the cutest baby in the universe. In this case, that's close to accurate. He looks exactly like the kid on the baby food jars. He's so cute, I'd wonder if he was mine, except he always reaches for books ahead of any other objects, so I figure that settles it. I spend a lot of time just looking at him and listening to him go, da 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 da. And, of course, I get contemplative. I'm often fascinated by the fact that humans are the most versatile, most capable species on Earth, and yet when we're born, we're among the least capable. Any other mammal, if they're not mobile at birth, they can walk in a few days. No other animal spends as many years completely dependent on older animals for its survival and development. Now, I'm not a biologist, so someone please email me if I get this wrong, but the reasons for this seem pretty obvious to me. It's too much development to happen in utero, given that our body shape makes birth complicated. Also, our motor and cognitive skills need lots of stimulus and feedback. Okay. But the consequence I've been thinking about lately is community. Not the trite, it takes a village thing, but from the other perspective. We spend a good chunk of our lives dependent on other people. It's a natural state. It's our starting state. And yet, as we begin to gain self-awareness, it bothers us. We're okay thinking of ourselves as social animals, but most of us are very uncomfortable thinking of ourselves as dependent animals, except when we're babies. Likewise, most of us are very uncomfortable with the idea that someone else could be dependent on us, except when we're new parents. These are natural relationships. In a sense, they're the most natural relationships. And I wonder sometimes if real self-awareness means understanding our dependence on other people throughout our lives, and when our own development calls for it, embracing that dependence. I'm not sure that's true. I'm not always comfortable with the idea myself. I don't have all the answers. But when I look at my 7-month-old, and he looks at me, and I see his happiness, it kind of makes sense. When he's not crying from teething, anyway. Well, that was quasi-deep. Let's move on to today's story. It's also about relationships, and I think you might find it a little familiar. The story is The Death Trap of Dr. Nefario, by Benjamin Rosenbaum. Mr. Rosenbaum's work has appeared in, and I quote, FNSF, Asimov's, Harper's, McSweeney's, Nature, Strange Horizons, Year's Best Science Fiction, Year's Best Fantasy and Horror, etc. This is a man who knows how to put words in order. He's a software developer by trade who's lived all over Europe and now works in the U.S. at the National Science Foundation. Of writing, he says, it's like being a superhero, but you don't need a costume. The story is read for us today by Chris Miller of the Unquiet Desperations podcast. Chris seeks out and interviews ordinary people who find ways to make their lives extraordinary. I highly recommend his podcast. I also have a minor supporting role in this reading. So, lay down on the couch and think about your childhood. It's story time.
The Death Trap of Dr. Nefario by Benjamin Rosenbaum. The phone rang at 3 a.m., and Hannah said, "Oh, God!" It rang as if to prove her point that I was working too hard, allowing my clients to call at all hours and leaving no space for her. That's why we were up at 3 a.m. We were fighting. "I have to take this call, Hannah," I said. "Let's finish talking about this later, maybe tomorrow." "I don't see the point," she said. "You don't listen. Fine, take it. I'm going to sleep." She walked into the bedroom and slammed the door behind her. I pressed the go button on my phone. "This is Dr. Goodman."
"Hi, Doc. Sorry about the hour, but I'm really upset."
"No problem, Dick," I said. Dick was one of my somewhat unusual clients, a celebrity crime fighter, a very successful and accomplished person who had made great personal progress on some difficult memories during the year we'd been working together. "What's on your mind?"
"I'm just feeling all this resentment against Bruce coming up again."
I settled onto the leather couch and said, "I'm glad you're telling me."
"I'm so tired of feeling this way.
Yes, I said. So what triggered it this time?
Well, I'm currently trapped in one of Dr. Nefario's death traps.
Really? Are you safe?
Well, you know, Doc, safe is a relative thing in my profession. But I have you on the headset, and I'm picking the lock on his handcuffs as we're talking. I think I'll be fine. The piranhas are still 5 or 6 feet below me.
All right. But isn't our conversation going to distract you? I asked. I know you're upset, but wouldn't you rather call back at another time?
I'd really like to talk about it, Doc. I always find talking to you clears my mind and makes me more effective. I may need to go if the henchmen come back, though.
All right. As long as you're sure that you're acting appropriately in your current environment, I trust you to make that decision. So how did this trigger your feelings of resentment?
Well, the thing is, it's kind of funny, but this is the exact same death trap Dr. Nefario had us in. Bruce and me, I mean. God, it must have been 18 years ago. I was really just a kid. I was scared, frankly, and I suggested that when we got out, we should make a run for it, you know? Go back to base and regroup. And he just laughed at me, you know? Don't worry, little fella. We'll be out of this in a jiffy. And I clammed right up. I had to run along after him and fight off the lesser henchmen while he captured Dr. Nefario. And I just had enough, you know? I was scared, and I wanted to go home and curl up with a good book. It was a school night, too. That was also typical. Other guys were going to parties and on dates, and I was slugging it out with men in rubber suits.
And you didn't feel you had any choice in the matter?
Not really. I mean, it's not like he would have forced me to stay, but it was so important to me to have his approval, and he was so stingy with it.
There was a clanging sound. What was that? I asked. Do you have to go?
No, that was just me crawling into the ventilation system. I got the handcuffs off.
I'm relieved. Go on.
That was the only time I felt I got any approval, you know? If I took out several henchmen on my own, then occasionally, and I mean occasionally, I'd hear, good hit. Or that post-combat glow, you know, with groaning injured criminals lying around us. Sometimes then he put a hand on my shoulder and grinned at me. The rest of the time, he was so demanding and repressed.
I'm glad you're telling me these feelings. I could hear Hannah in the other room getting ready for bed. She'd be taking off her stockings now. 30 years of marriage, and I still wanted to be in there watching her take off her stockings. Dick, I find it striking that you're in such a similar position today as you were then. Did you go out tonight to win Bruce's approval as well?
I don't know. No, I don't think so. I do feel like I have to stop Dr. Nefario. I know we've talked about this, and maybe my sense of personal obligation is exaggerated, but also, I enjoy my work. So much of law enforcement is bureaucratic drudgery. I feel really privileged to occupy the niche I do.
When you used to go out crime-fighting, is that the right word, crime-fighting?
Sure.
Did anyone else ever come along with you and Bruce?
Sometimes. He had some friends, you know, other celebrities. You'd recognize the names.
What about other helpers? Did anyone ever apply for your job, as it were?
Sure. We got tons of letters, some even from gymnasts and prize-fighters and so on. But he always laughed them off.
Dick, I think you know how much I appreciate the difficult aspects of your young adulthood and the ways it was exceptional, and I want to emphasize that the feelings of resentment you have about it are perfectly appropriate and understandable. At the same time, I want to offer you a different perspective.
Okay.
You spoke about how Bruce was stingy with his approval. Now, he's a very unusual character, very suited to the job he has, possibly less suited to other jobs. Like being an adoptive father, you might want to consider that he had other ways of communicating approval. Maybe ways that weren't effective at the time, but if you go back and look at them, approval was there.
Like what?
Well, considering how picky he was with who he took along, didn't those very invitations to come crime-fighting on a school night express a lot of approval? There was a long silence. I wondered if I'd pushed too far. Dick, I asked.
Sorry, Doc. I just had to reprogram this access lock. I'm at Dr. Nefario's command center, so we'll have to go in a few seconds.
All right.
I guess you're right, Doc. I mean, I know Bruce picked me to train. He took me in. He must have been proud of me. But I don't feel it. It's like he was proud of himself for picking such a great ward. But he didn't...
He didn't what?
I wonder if Dr. Nefario's goons have glue guns. I didn't pack any anti-glue tonight.
Dick, what were you going to say? He didn't what?
I could make some anti-glue out of a gas mask filter and some super salt.
Dick?
I only brought one gas mask.
Dick, What were you going to say?
About what?
You said Bruce was proud of himself for picking such a great ward, but he didn't. What?
Oh. That.
Yes, please go on.
That was stupid anyway.
I squeezed my eyes shut and massaged the bridge of my nose with my thumb and forefinger. Dick, didn't you say you were going to have to go in a few seconds?
Yeah, I guess.
He sounded like a sullen teenager. So do we need to wrap this up? I could sense him struggling.
Whatever. I don't even feel like going in there.
But Dick, aren't they going to find you?
No, they're all busy with the shrink ray.
The shrink ray?
Yeah, Dr. Nefario is going to shrink the city, put it in a bottle, and auction it off online.
I felt myself squeezing the cell phone tighter. Well, don't you need to stop him?
You're the one who said my personal sense of responsibility is exaggerated. Someone will handle it. There's no shortage of us.
I took a deep breath. Somehow, I was not being effective in this situation. I was finding Dick childish. I wasn't giving him the empathy he needed and deserved. I took another deep breath.
Okay, Doc. You're breathing heavily.
Dick, I don't think what you were going to say was stupid. I think it's important. That's what makes it so hard to say. As long as you can't say what you feel about Bruce, it owns you. Once you say it, you begin to own it.
He didn't love me!
Dick said, and burst out crying. The door to the bedroom opened, and Hannah said, "This is your last chance, Gabe Goodman. I'm turning out the light." I stabbed the mute button with my thumb. "Hannah, please! I've told you never to interrupt me when I'm on the phone with a client." "Oh, of course. I forgot. The clients always come first." "This particular client is in a life-or-death situation." Hannah looked tired. "When are they not, Gabe? When are they not?" She went into the bedroom and shut the door softly.
"Doc, it sounds like you've got to go."
I looked down at the phone display. It appeared that I'd missed the mute button. I lowered my forehead into the palm of my hand. Now I felt like crying. "Never mind, Dick. Please go on."
"No, Doc. You listen to me. That was your wife, right?"
"Yes, that was my wife."
"Well, it doesn't sound like she's so happy about your clients calling you in the middle of the night."
"Dick, please, this is between me and Mrs. Goodman. Let's move on."
"No, let's not move on. Why should you let me break up your marriage, Doc? The work always comes first, is that it?"
"Dick!"
"Just like Bruce."
"Did the work always come first with Bruce?"
"Sure as hell did. It came before everything. It came first and last, and I just couldn't take that anymore, and that's why I left, Doc. That's why. I wanted a more balanced life."
To my astonishment, we were getting somewhere. "Do you feel guilty about leaving Bruce?" He paused.
"Yeah."
He sounded surprised.
"Yeah? I guess I do."
"Let's talk about that."
"No, Doc, let's not talk about that. Because in a minute, you and your cell phone are going to be really small, and then your voice will be really high-pitched and tinny, and it'll be hard to take you seriously as a therapist."
I cleared my throat. "All right."
"Doc, do you love your wife?"
I was surprised to find tears in my eyes. "I do, Dick. I really do."
"Then you go do something about that, and I'll handle Dr. Nefario. See you on Friday."
"Goodbye, Dick. Be careful." I stayed on the line a minute, listening to the bang and kapow sounds, and then I hung up and went into the bedroom. Hannah was reading. "I'm a stubborn bastard, Hannah," I said. "Yes, you are." She put her book down. "I'm sorry I interrupted your call. I just don't know how to get through to you anymore." I sat on the edge of the bed. "Hannah, I love you." She blinked. Her face softened, but she shook her head. "I love you too, Gabe, but we've got problems." I took her hands in mine. "What do you say we go away next weekend, just the two of us? I'll leave my cell phone here and we'll tell the clients that." She shrugged. "It's a start." We were still normal-sized. Our voices weren't high-pitched and tinny. I leaned down and kissed her on the forehead. She smirked at me. "There are people with bigger problems," I said. My intention was to reassure her, or perhaps myself. She yanked her hands out of mine. "I'm sure there are, but that doesn't change the size of ours. Jesus, Gabe, there you go again." I started to cry. Despite my recognition of its therapeutic value, I don't in fact cry myself all that often. I put my face into my hands. Hannah pulled me into her embrace. "Oh, come on," she said. "I don't want to lose you," I sobbed. "I'm a lousy husband." "Yes, sometimes," she said, "but you're a great therapist." No, I'm a lousy therapist, too. That was a fiasco. I almost got us all shrunk. Cut it out, Hannah said. What are you talking about? Look at all the issues these people have. The body image issues, the megalomania, the post-traumatic stress, the childhoods they had, for God's sake. These are hard clients, Gabe. They're all teetering on the border of nuts to begin with, and then they get mind-swapped or kidnapped by robots every month. Half of them can't have sex without worrying about burning or crushing someone to death. They're lonely and scared, and everyone expects them to act confident all the time. You hold them together, Gabe. That means you hold this city together. Listen to me. I'm proud of you. You're my hero. I cried harder. I cried for a while. Hannah's body was soft and warm against mine. Finally, I stopped, and Hannah wiped my cheeks and nose with a Kleenex. You want my theory? She asked. Her eyes twinkled. I think you spend so much time with your clients because their lives are so full of action. Maybe, I sniffled. So I think you need to get some more action yourself. Get in bed, Gabe Goodman, and leave the light on. I was happy to comply.
And that was our story. Some of you might think that character bore a suspicious resemblance to a pop culture icon. If that's what you believe, I assure you you're wrong. Any similarity with Frasier is completely coincidental. Three bits of administrivia today. First, a warm welcome to our new listeners from the Yahoo Podcast Directory and from Boing Boing, where Cory Doctorow took the time to say something nice about us. Between those two, our subscriber count has jumped up by 1,000 in about a week. We'll just pull some more chairs up to the table. I hope you're enjoying what you hear, and that you'll choose to keep hearing it. Second, the Mirror Mask guide came through for us. We did get some swag. Not a lot of swag, but enough that over the next week we'll be randomly choosing 4 people out of all of you who sent feedback, and we'll contact the 4 of you to see if you want some stuff. Thanks again for your comments. We did learn a lot by them, and we will attempt to use that knowledge for good rather than evil. And third, one of my fondest dreams has come true. Not the one with Scarlett Johansson and the giant block of Jell-O, that's something else. But we now own the escapepod.org domain. For those of you keeping track, this is the 3rd domain name EscapePod has had, but I fully intend it to be our final and permanent name. It's working now, and we'll start to publicize with it. But if you've already subscribed or bookmarked under escapepod.info, or, for you real old-timers, escape.extraneous.org, don't worry, all 3 of those domains will continue to work and serve the same content long into the future. We also have a book review.
Hi Steve, Jason from Australia here. I wanted to give you a review of Harry Turtledove's World War series of novels. I completely love this series of books, and can't recommend them highly enough. To set the scene for your listeners, consider the following. World War II is going on. The world is in flames and its nation pitted against nation. Until a threat from a distant star arrives in the form of advanced lizard-like aliens bent on conquering the Earth and enslaving humanity. Okay, I admit this sounds like the plot from a bad B-movie, but the story is excellent. Harry Turtledove has created aliens that evolved very differently to humans and who have innumerable problems conquering the people of Earth. They expected to fight savages on horseback, not a series of industrialized nations already on a war footing. There are 4 books in this series, with 3 more in a follow-up colonization series, each weighing in around 600 pages. But they're some of the best sci-fi I ever read, and are definitely worth a read. See you later.
Thanks, Jason. That was Jason Rennie from the Dead White Guys podcast and the Sci-Fi podcast, that's Sci-P-H-I, which is about science fiction and philosophy. Check them both out. And we've got lots of promos and featured donors, but I've just babbled too much, and we try to keep this back segment short, so I hope you'll forgive me for pushing those to next week. The closing essentials. If you like this week's Escape Pod, tell a friend. If you really liked it, consider donating to us via the PayPal link on our website, escapepod.org. We are the first paying market in podcasting. We pay our authors for the rights to their stories, and we rely on your support to keep doing that. And if you're a writer, see our guidelines on the site. Escape Pod releases on a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, which means you can give it freely to the birds and bees, if you don't take their money and you don't alter the content. All other rights are reserved by our authors. Our music comes to us from Daikaiju. By day, they are 4 ordinary men. At night, they don their kabuki masks and become pretty good monster surf rock musicians. Penetrate their mystery at daikaiju.org. That was our show for today. Until next week, have fun, and remember, I'm not insane. It's the voices. They're insane. The voices in my head.